This is episode 105 with Kim Addis.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome everybody to the As Told by Nomads podcast. Today I have with me Kim Addis, and Kim Addis is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and Journal Engine Software. You know, she's an author, she's a speaker, she's an entrepreneur, she's a coach, and she's a mother of five. So she's Superwoman, essentially. And in addition to that, she is one of North America's foremost experts on coaching with a focus on mindset and thought mastery. Welcome to the show, Kim.
I am so psyched to be here.
No, I'm psyched to have you on because I get the chance to really just throw any questions at you. So one of the things that you talk about and is the benefit of having your frame of mind coaching is transforming your world. You say that a lot. Why do you think people need to change their frame of mind?
Well, look, when we look at any results that anyone gets in any area of their life, what we can really point back to is how their thinking led them to get the results they got. So whether the results were negative or positive, the seed of those results was their thinking. So very often when we think of changing the results we get, we think of doing different things, except thought precedes action. Right. It comes first. And so what I'd rather people do is start to shift their thinking a little bit before they shift their action so that their thinking is lined up with this new action to create a new result. So we always have to start with thoughts.
Interesting. So when did this happen for you personally?
When did I start changing my thinking?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, it's an ongoing process. But, you know, years and years and years ago, I was married to someone else. I had two kids, and things weren't going exactly as I imagined my life to be going. And I ended up getting divorced, and it was a really rough divorce. And I remember, you know, what I wanted more than anything was to go through that divorce with as much grace and dignity as I could muster. And some days weren't easy. And for whoever's listening who's going through a divorce or has been through a divorce, you could probably relate. Mm-hmm. But divorce has tough times. It has its low moments. And it creates a lot of fear and insecurity and doubt and worry. And you're worrying about all kinds of things. Like how will my kids end up? How will I be able to handle it financially? Right. Am I going to be at war with this person for the rest of my life? What's it going to be like now that I'm single and alone? What's it like to date again? I mean, there are a million questions, but that's when I started really tuning in to the idea that the way I thought could profoundly affect whatever outcomes I wanted, whether it was meeting a new person or being a really good mother or starting my own business, whatever it was, I could change it based on how I thought.
Gotcha. And then obviously down your path, you had this divorce, two kids. You were you in real estate too? Because you've had several.
Yeah, well, I did a lot of work in the real estate industry. We created a product specifically for the real estate industry, and so I got to know a lot of people. I actually even won an award for being one of the top 50 most influential women in real estate.
Congratulations!
But I don't think I'm all that influential anymore.
Nah, I would beg to differ. Oh no, congratulations on that. So you were there, and then, you know, you were going through that personal time, and then something must have shifted in you because you obviously, you know, you transformed your life essentially. You had three more kids, you became known as this thought leader.
Well, I didn't have three more kids. I got three more.
Oh,
kids.
You got
three more. Remarried to a guy. I'm insane, but I'm not nuts, right? There's a difference. So I met a new guy who was a lot more aligned with my values than my first husband. And I was married a long time the first time. I was married for 15 years. Okay. But he was a single dad. He had full-time care of his kids. And so when we got together, our families became blended. And so, I mean, that certainly didn't happen overnight. But what I will say is that when people have a hard time, when they're suffering, when they're challenged with something, when they're facing some kind of adversity, there's two options: major growth or major struggle, major difficulty. They stay in that place for a long time, or they choose that time to really decide to grow in a big leap. And that was my choice at the time.
Cool. No, thank you for sharing. Thank you for that clarification. Because, you know, there's a difference with having kids and getting three kids. So that's a very big distinction. But it's still an amazing feat. Because five kids, I mean, I came from a small family. So I can't even imagine what it would be with five kids. So,
well, yeah, we're all living together under one roof. It's definitely interesting.
All right. So now with that personal life, you started to get that going. When you created the software Journal Engine, right? What was it? Are you focusing on the importance of journaling? Do you think that journaling can really transform the way you think? Or you think it's important to write things down? What's the whole process there?
So why did I create this software? Is that the question?
Yes.
I'll tell you why. Well, when I decided to look into coaching, I started to understand that the vast majority of coaches out there are building their businesses on the idea that they can help you reach the goals you want to reach in order for you to live the life you want to live. Mm-hmm. And so there's an ideology there, is that when you achieve goals, you're happier, right?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's very interesting to see how coaches coach, because what they do is they help clients create basically a plan that says, here are all the things that I need to do, here are all the actions I need to take in order to achieve my goals, and as a coach, I'm going to help you achieve those goals by holding you accountable to all the bits and pieces and all the stops along the way that will help you move forward and get there. And something about that just completely rubbed me the wrong way. It just felt like it wasn't a match for me. I thought to myself, you know what? I don't think people really need that accountability component. I think people know what they need to do in order to achieve their goals, but something's preventing them from getting it done.
Right.
And it has to do with the way they think. It has to do with the way they see themselves in the world. It has to do with the way they value themselves and the way they think about their abilities, their experience, their competence, all of those things. So when I started coaching, I thought, you know what, I'm not going to manage anybody's to-do list. That's not what I want to do, but I really want to help people get out of their own way by looking at their thinking and really helping them think in a way that allows them to achieve their goals with greater ease. The thing is that I don't know how people are thinking on an ongoing basis. I can talk to you, but it doesn't mean you'll tell me what you're thinking. It doesn't mean that you're going to tell me what you're thinking over time, and it doesn't mean I'm going to be able to get deep enough to really understand the beliefs that are holding dominion over your life. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, in order for me to be a really effective coach, I need to get into the hearts and the minds of my clients every single day. And that's when I decided to ask them to journal. So I would give them a question and they would journal, and then every time they journaled, I would read the journal and respond. And so there would be a dialogue that would happen between me and my client. And the idea was for me to be able to really understand the patterns that they had that they weren't even aware of that caused success and the patterns that caused failure or struggle. And so that's where it started. And at the beginning, I didn't have any software. I used like a blogging software, but it was really hard to use and the security was low and it was really a struggle. So I said, I'm going to create my own piece of software for my clients. And I wanted it to do certain things, but primarily I wanted a highly secure piece of software that created a high degree of privacy, where they felt completely safe and secure to really expose their deepest personal thoughts. And that's when I created Journal Engine. And so now I use Journal Engine with my clients, but we also license it out to other coaches who are interested in using it with their clients as well.
Wow. You know, what's this guy? Mr. Wonderful on Shark Tank would love you for just licensing your stuff right there. But that's a great business model. So you have this platform, you built it out of a need that you had, and to make it easier for you to manage your clients, and now other people can just come and use it for their clients, and you get, you know, a percentage of that.
Well, we just license it out, so they pay a monthly fee.
Oh, so it's just a monthly fee. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Now, you said you designed, you know, mind coaching program to provide a client with a powerful infrastructure where they could develop the skills with, you know, for deliberate thought. And I like what you say, that the greatest difference between those people who are stratospherically successful and everyone is their thinking. What have you found is the biggest roadblock in that thinking? Because I find in my experience that many times, many people are afraid to start something because they don't know exactly how to do it. And sometimes they want that roadmap. And I always like to tell my clients and people that I talk to that for many of us, there's not necessarily a roadmap for you to follow, but you have to find something that keeps you going. So I'm just curious as to what your answer would be to that question, where they're like, well, I want to be able to have this roadmap. I want to be able to have this by now. I want to be able to do this. And if I don't meet that, I feel discouraged and I'm not going to be able to meet my success, and it's going to be blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to stop.
Okay. So one of the things you talked about was that people struggle because they don't know how to start. And I will tell you that in my experience, the how is rarely the hardest part. Hows are readily available. If I want to look up, you know, I'm not a technical person, but if I want to look up something like, you know, how to program something online, or how to build a website, or how to, you know, make my internet work again, I can find it. I can Google it and I can find it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of information out there. The hows are readily available. The issue isn't the hows. The issue is something bigger, and it's something deeper, which is something called beliefs. So what I believe to be true about my ability with technology will determine whether or not I even go and search for an answer and attempt to try it. It's those beliefs that create blockages for people that prevent them from reaching their goals. Mm-hmm. So if I don't believe that I could ever have the skills or the abilities or the strength or the fortitude to start a business, I'll never do it. It will never, very rarely have anything to do with, well, I don't know how to do it.
Huh.
It could be, but that's a belief as well.
Interesting. Okay. No, right? I can see that. Yeah.
Okay, so that's part A. So it's not the how-tos that stop people from getting things done. It's what they believe to be true about their ability to get things done that plays a bigger role in preventing them from achieving their goals. The other thing you said is, you know, people feel kind of bad. Actually, repeat what you said. You said people get discouraged.
Yeah, they get discouraged because they don't have a roadmap, right?
And they don't have a roadmap, yeah. Right? Well, and again, I'll tell you, discouragement comes from here. It comes from the idea that they should be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that should concept, like, I'm supposed to be thinner, I'm supposed to be smarter, I'm supposed to be more wealthy, I'm supposed to be married, I'm supposed to have two kids, I'm supposed to live in a big house and drive a really nice car. And all those supposed to be's or should be's, in comparison to where they are, that's what causes the discouragement. And so very often people think, well, it's the roadmap, the way to get there that will help them. And again, that's a how-to. And rather than, I believe that if you were to sit down and create a plan, you could create a plan. The problem isn't creating a plan. The problem is executing the plan. And what prevents people from executing a plan? It's their thinking. And it's their belief in their ability to execute the plan. That's the issue. It's not the plan or the creation of a plan.
So it's just the doing it, you know, the execution. There's a podcast I listen to, another one, The Art of Likeability, and he always says, you know, all this information is not going to help you. It's what you do with the information that will help you. So he's always prefacing every single piece of advice, whether it's from a thought leader like yourself. And then people, like you said, just don't do it. And they're afraid of failure. They're afraid to start. They're afraid of what it looks like outside. They're afraid there might not be enough. They have all these self-limiting beliefs. And it oftentimes, more oftentimes than not, it's what pulls them back. But then you find yourself 5 to 10 years later thinking, why didn't I just do it when I could have done it? And then it's regret, and that just compounds your whole thinking. And it goes back and back and back and forth, and it's like you already have this mountain of self-doubt that you have to dig through.
That's right. And really, you know, when we look at the coaching world, a lot of coaches just, you know, they make you do. They make you take action. And action is good, but it's not sustainable if the self-doubt still exists.
Correct.
So, for example, I'll give you a perfect example. I had a client, and what he wanted more than anything was to meet a woman. And he said, you know, like, I spoke to someone, and they created a plan for me. Now you go into a bar. They even gave me a script. Here's what you say. Here's what you do. But I was so uncomfortable. And even though I did it, I could never do it again.
Huh.
Why? Because that wasn't aligned with who he is. That wasn't consistent with how he wanted to show up in the world, right? And so for me, it wasn't about making him, you know, say these words or say these lines or do the things he needed to do. First, we had to really examine what he was afraid of where it came to meeting girls or women. We had to look at what created discomfort, why it created discomfort, how well he felt in terms of the ability to be a good partner to someone else. We had to look at all that and clean it up before sending him into a bar.
Yeah. You're saying we have to look deeper within ourselves before to really find the root of the problems. And a lot of people focus on just doing without actually attacking the root of the problem.
That's exactly right. And you know what? It's kind of like, you know, weight loss. People go, okay, I'm going to go to the gym. And they do. And they go for a while. And then what happens? They stop going.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because their thinking isn't fundamentally lined up with that action. They're forcing themselves to go. And it's okay. Force yourself. But that doesn't create sustainability.
All right. Well, then the listener out there is asking this question. Well, Kim, what can I do to make myself feel more confident with myself? To be able to be more transparent with myself about these problems? What can I do? What steps can I take?
You know, when we work with our clients, we ask them to journal every single day for the duration of the coaching period. Why do we do that? So we can see how their thinking is impacting them.
Okay.
And so when you feel uncomfortable, ask yourself, what am I feeling uncomfortable about? Why do I feel uncomfortable about this? Is it true that this thing needs to create discomfort for me? Because we invent our experiences, we create them based on our interpretation of what's going on and how we see things. Mm-hmm. And so if, let's say, I have a speaking engagement, actually, this is a true story. I speak all the time. I'm asked to speak at all kinds of major events. But years ago, I was super uncomfortable about it. I lack confidence, and I used to have to really psych myself up, and I force myself. And I'd go, and I'd present, and I'd do a really good job. But after my presentation, every single time, I'd crash. Like emotionally, just totally crash. And the reason that happened was because I would feel that they were evaluating me and judging me, and I didn't like how they were judging me, or I didn't like how I imagined they were judging me. One day, I sort of started to realize, hey, I'm there to deliver like a boat full of love. And if I do that job, then I've done my job.
Huh. Yeah, no, I love it. So you realized that you were there to deliver, you know, that what you want to do was deliver that boat of love, and then you just became confident with that. And then when you felt like you did that, that was enough for you.
That's right. That's it. I did my job. And so, you know, what I wanted them to feel is I wanted them to receive my warmth, my acknowledgement, my approval, all the things that they are deeply searching to feel. And when I reversed everything, when I realized it's my job to give them what they need as opposed to their job to give me what I need, everything shifted. So now I go, I'm not like, I'm, of course I get a few butterflies, but not what, like what it used to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm relaxed, and I'm having a good time on stage, and they're having a good time with me.
Okay. All right. Well, no, I mean, I can certainly relate with butterflies. I probably still get more, but when I get on it, it turns off. But it's like a nervous energy that channels me in the right direction.
Right.
But it's a way you manage that. What are some character qualities you drew from your experience that helped you with the success you had?
You know what? I'll tell you something about me. It's like when things don't work, I just kind of stop for a minute and I just keep going. Like, I just keep trying. I try something new.
Right.
And I remember when I was younger, my dad used to say, you know, there was a movie that he used to love watching called The King of Comedy. And it was a movie with an actor, Robert De Niro, where he wanted more than anything to attract the attention of, like, a famous movie star. And the movie star wouldn't give him the time of day. And so, you know, he kept going into his office and sitting and waiting and waiting and waiting, and nothing would happen. And he'd kept getting kicked out at the end of the day. Finally, he decided to take matters into his own hands, and he decided to climb in through the window and have one-on-one time with this movie star. But my dad used to say, look, if you can't get in through the door, then find a window and climb through. And essentially, that's been my approach from a business standpoint. Always try to find a way in. If you can't go in directly, find another entry point. But don't get discouraged and just keep trying. And honestly, over the past 10 years, as far as I've been running this business, there have been many times when things haven't worked. But I keep trying until I find an entry point. And I think really that's the character trait that I would say is the most relevant.
No, I love it. I love it. And it's just that idea of always finding a way and letting your passion fuel you. There are many times when you know you have something in your mind and you want to do something and you have to pivot. And learning the ability to pivot and learning that you stay committed to your goal is one of the better ways of changing your form of thinking. Because if one way doesn't work, there's always another way. And you know, altering your mindset in the sense that you don't think, oh, if I didn't do it this way, I'm never going to be able to do it. So I think
that's cool. Right.
Yes. I think it's good. Well, I want to go back to early days view. So when did you first realize your first profit?
Oh, I think, you know what? Profit came right away, except that, well, let's not call it right away.
Okay.
Let's call it, like, you know, let's say 3 or 4 months in. But what I did from the get-go, actually, it's a funny story. When I first started coaching, I was terrified to coach because I didn't really know what I was doing. And so I sold coaching to a group of people, and I said, it's a pilot. I'm running a pilot. Let's see how it goes. I sold it at a ridiculously low rate. I think it was $100 per person for 10 weeks of coaching. And I hired a person who would co-coach with me, someone who was more experienced, so that I would feel more confident. So I had 5 people. I started to increase my rates, and slowly, slowly, like from the get-go, there was a profit.
Okay. So yeah, no, so it's good. So you built that initial community of people, and then I guess the co-coach gave you that confidence, and then you started feeling more confident, like, hey, this is something I can do. And then,
well, the co-coach actually, what I learned from the clients was that they didn't like his style of coaching. And so they were happier with me, so I got rid of him fast.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. And the good thing about yours is it's not a seasonal product. It's something that's always needed. So do your clients evolve, or do you just have a specific target market?
I coach a specific type of person. I typically coach, and I have a team of coaches, right? So it's not just me, but we coach people who are highly driven, who have 3 things in common. Number one is they have really big goals that they want to achieve. Number two is that they are determined to make a difference in the world and leave an impact. And number three is that they are big livers. In other words, they have a real zest for life and they really want to live an extraordinary life.
It's good. So people are just not willing to accept mediocrity, and they want to be able to tap into
greatness. Exactly. Those are my clients.
Awesome. No, it's good. It sounds like it aligns with your brand, and it is who you are, and it makes sense. I've read some of the stuff you've written to, because you write for a few publications. You listen to some of that, and it's all aligned. You're all about making that impact and stepping into your greatness, your light. So that's pretty cool that you know, it doesn't deviate in some way. But your business is global, as you alluded to earlier before we got on the call, before we started recording. Do you find that this thinking shifts across cultures, or is it just at the base of who we are as humans, it's similar?
You know, that's such a good question.
Bam! Yes!
Honestly, like we coach people in different locations of the world, different religions, different upbringings, different home situations. And there is definitely different thinking in different cultures. 100%. However, what we find is beliefs are very similar. Or, let me say it a little differently, limiting beliefs are similar. So they grow up differently with a different set of expectations, but what we find is beliefs that cause blockages are similar across cultures.
Right, right. And the reason I was asking, because I, you know, growing up the way I did, which was in several countries, you find many, I found, you know, a lot of cultures had innate feelings that were already ingrained in them. So if you're a woman, you do this. If you're a man, you do that. And if you do this, you're supposed to. That supposed to you were talking about earlier was already ingrained in them earlier. So when I was really curious about what it's like when you go into these environments and you're telling them to essentially change a whole lifetime of thinking that they've had, right? And it's that can be tricky, I imagine.
We're not there to change their values, right? But we are there to make sure that they are living in accordance to their values, not the ones that were just handed down to them, you know, automatically.
Gotcha, gotcha. And now I'm thinking, I love what Kim, you know, Kim's been talking about. I really want to transform my life. I want to make a difference. I often say the mission statement of what we do is use your difference to make a difference. So I want to use my difference to make a difference. Kim, where can I sign up? What would you tell them?
So I would say go to frameofmindcoaching.com. And on that site, there's an opportunity to get a complimentary coaching call. But it's not an ordinary coaching call. It's very unique because we ask you to journal, and the coach will literally take your journal and use that journal for their coaching as though you were really a client. So try that experience. So many people have told me that that one call has made a huge difference for them in their lives. So try one complimentary coaching call, frameofmindcoaching.com.
Yeah, and you can't beat that, because look at it. It's a complimentary thing. You get to get this in-depth, amazing coach or a network of coaches work with you, and then if you want to even go even further, you know, you can work with her, and it'll be great, and then we'll have more great leaders that are actually transformative as opposed to some of the stuff we have going on right now. But that's another podcast.
But yeah.
No, but other than that, where else can we find you? In social media, like?
Yeah, we're all over the place. Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Kim Addis.
Kim Addis.
Just look me up.
Kim Addis, and it's ADES, people. That's
correct.
Addis, and you write for several publications as well, right? We can catch some of your articles.
Yeah, I write for a whole bunch of different publications. You know, again, just Google it, and you'll find all kinds of articles. You'll find all kinds of audios, all kinds of stuff.
Yes, and other podcast interviews. The last thing I wanted to say, and the last thing I always ask my guests is, how they use their difference to make a difference. So how do you, Kim, use your difference to make
a difference? Honestly, like, people laugh at me, but I think that I'm a pretty quirky person. and really, I bring all of myself to everything I do, whether it's coaching, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a call with a coach, whether it's a call with a client, whether it's parenting. I definitely have a high, high degree of quirk, and I think that's my secret sauce. Yeah. It's the quirk factor.
You're not afraid to be who you are. And that's
I'm not afraid to laugh. I'm not afraid to have a good time. You know, you said, hey, I hear singing. That's me being quirky, right?
That's me. Yeah, that is true. That is true. That is true. No, I think that's a good skill to have. So, and that's also, you know, it's endearing, and it makes people feel more comfortable. It's because, at least in my experience, it did when I was listening to the singing voice that she had. So, well, I want to thank you on for coming on the show. And I'll put this together, and hopefully we can get more people to journal, but also journal with a purpose, and also get rid of the limiting beliefs and turn that to beliefs for positive thinking.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It has been an amazing pleasure, and I really hope that we get a chance to talk again.
No problem.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.